Greetings to all of you. So Dave received the invitation to come and converse on the Dhamma with all of you. And it's the third day of this Wat Map Chan retreat here. And so no matter who we are, no matter what method we use for the practice, whether we recite Buddho, we use Anapanasati, looking at the breath, we recite rising, falling, or Samma Arahang, whether we are Thai, or Malaysian, or from other places in the world, that all of us need to meet with certain obstructions in our practice. And these are what we call the Nivaranas, so the five hindrances, of which there are five. And so there's Kama Chanda, and then there's Payabhata, Tinamita, Uddacha, Kukucha, and Vichikicha. And so this is craving for sensuality, and then there is ill will and sleepiness, drowsiness, and there is restlessness, scatteredness, and doubt. And so the first of these, it's a liking for sensuality, a seeking out of that lust, whether it's a sexual lust or for other things that we like or find beautiful, that all of that we take to be this Kama Chanda. It's now, it's very easy for us to experience that we just look at our phones, go on social media. We don't need to actually physically go anywhere. We just pick up the phone and we see many of these things. And it's easy for us to slip into the stream of that, to get taken along by it. So like Mudang, the pygmy hippopotamus that people have a lot of liking for these days. But this can also be an obstruction to our practice as well. And so if we kind of look at that in a deeper way, it can form an obstruction for us. And so if there's this kind of liking for it, a love for these things, and that goes deep into the heart and we're not able to let it go, then that is a nivarana, that's a hindrance. And this is something that people who practice, they need to try to get past. Because if they get stuck on this, they're not able to go past it, then that's going to really slow their practice down. And so the second then is Payabhata, so this ill will. The first, Kamachanda, second, Payabhata. So there's anger, there's hatred, there's this jealousy and holding on to grudges, wanting to get revenge. And at the very least, it's like a crocodile which is just lying still beneath the surface of the water. And that's what it's like in the heart, if that ill will is there, but it's not kind of actively manifesting, showing symptoms. But when it starts, when that crocodile starts to awaken, then this comes up kind of as like a obstruction in the heart, that things aren't kind of flowing, that they're obstructed. But it hasn't shown itself clearly yet. But if the crocodile wakes up even more, then it turns into anger. And then we start to display that through our facial expressions, through our bodily actions, through our speech. And this is an obstruction, a hindrance for practitioners. And these two are very important obstructions, the first two. And so there's Kamachanda and Payabhata. And this is the first barrier, the first barrier that practitioners need to pass through. And so if other people display anger towards us, and we feel hurt by that, we hold on to that, and that turns into holding a grudge and wanting to get revenge, then that is what we call ill will. And so the wanting to return what they gave to us, wanting to harm them back. And so if practitioners don't get past this, then it's something which can really afflict the heart, you know, this seeking out of revenge. And it's very dangerous for us. It has a lot of harm and damage for us. And then when we sit in meditation, this feeling of anger come up, we want to hurt someone else, and the mind just can't get into peace. And so this is very important, and if practitioners don't see the harm and the drawback of anger, of ill will, then this is a great hindrance for us in our practice. So therefore we need to try to see that this anger is something which is not good. We need to try to find methods to get past this obstacle, or at the very least to lighten it, to reduce it. So we can develop metta. And so they say that this way of clearing out anger and ill will is through developing the Brahma-viharas. So that of metta, there's loving kindness, and there's compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. And so we try to develop those Brahma-viharas, those divine qualities of the mind. Try to be developing this loving kindness within our hearts. And if we see people doing good things, we anumodana, so we rejoice in their goodness as well. And so this too is a method for cultivating metta within us. And so in society, we're able to develop metta for one another. We're able to see that all the people within our family, within our society, within the whole world, that we're all friends of one another. And so I myself am Thai, but I would also like to kind of praise the Thai people a bit as well, that they really help one another. And if there's any difficulty, any disaster, then we help one another. And this is a quality of Thais, but also Singaporeans, Malaysians, and a trait amongst Asians that is more prominent than in other cultures. So having this quality of metta and having gratitude as well, and a quality of respect. So wishing to help one another. So in the West, they have some of this, but it's not as much as in Asia. But these qualities are very helpful, suitable qualities for practitioners. So even though many people may come together, that if we have this metta, then it's easy for us to stay with one another because of that loving kindness that we have. You know, for Asians, ever since they were born, then they're taught by their parents to give, to be generous, to show respect. And these are all necessary qualities for practitioners. So like those coming to live and train under a Kruba Ajahn, so a great monk, a great teacher, that at the very least they need to have respect for him. That if he says for them to do something, then they listen to that. And then sometimes, you know, one might feel that I don't want to do this, or I don't agree with this, that this just doesn't sit all that well, or it goes against what I want to do. But being practitioners, we need to listen, even though we may think, well, this isn't correct, but we just follow the instruction first. And this is something which can really help for us in our practice. And so we do this, we have this respect, we develop these brahmaviharas, we develop metta. And when we do that, then our practice will develop and grow. And so the third quality, the third hindrance that one needs to overcome is tinamita. So this drowsiness or sloth and torpor. So this can manifest as a sleepiness, but also the mind being sunken or feeling gloomy or depressed. And so maybe we're sitting in meditation and it's quite hot, maybe mosquitoes around and we're feeling very drowsy. And so there's feeling of being ill at ease in the heart. You may start becoming melancholy and sad and gloomy and thinking that we're out of hope, or maybe we start becoming bored. And these are all things that it's possible to arise within the hearts of practitioners. Maybe it doesn't come up all the time, but it arises when the causes are there for it to arise. But at times we do need to meet with it. So then what do we do to get past it? And so a means to go past this is to use objects of recollection that bring up our satta, our faith. And so if we have faith in a Krubajan, so an awakened teacher, then we can recollect that teacher, or we can recollect the Buddha. So in order to find something that our hearts can lean upon, that we can depend upon, to give energy and encouragement to our heart. And then when we have that energy, that encouragement, then we can carry on with our practice. And no matter what we experience, whether it's this ill will, or whether it's the sensuality or this drowsiness, we're able to put up a fight against them. Whatever it is that comes up, we need to find means to be able to overcome that. Because all of these things, they have their causality and they have their reasoning for them to arise and their reasoning for them to cease. And so with this drowsiness, then, that if we're sitting and we're feeling quite drowsy, then we can get up and do walking meditation. Or we can chant within our hearts. So just like Lumpo Anan recommends, we chant Itipiso, so the recollection of the Buddha, and can do this 108 times, and if that sleepiness still hasn't gone, then go through it another 108 times, and just carry on chanting like that. And then it's possible that as we do that, the heart becomes more peaceful. So we can use this Itipiso, this chant, as a meditation object and mantra within our hearts. Because if we're just looking at our breath, reciting Buddha, meditating in this way, using this mantra, staying with the breath, this is something that's quite subtle. And so it's possible then for the sleepiness to still stay. And when it's like that, then the heart's not at peace. So sometimes we can be sitting for 2 hours and feeling sleepy for 2 hours, and we don't experience any peace during that. So we need to find something new, then, in order to fix it. We need to try to find another method if what we're doing is not working. Because practitioners, we need to have wisdom. And if we're not wise, then we can't practice, we can't meditate. But for us, we've seen the drawback in the cycle of samsara and birth and death, which shows that we do have wisdom. We've got this quality already. So we need to try to put that into practice when we meditate. So when we're sitting down and meditating, whatever it is that comes up, whatever obstacle it is, whether that's this restlessness or drowsiness or ill will, we need to try to find methods that are able to fix that. So like Lumpur Anan, in previous times when he was a younger monk and he was feeling drowsy, there were times when he would sit on the edge of a well, that he'd just stayed up all night practicing and was feeling very sleepy. And so he sat meditation right on beside a well. And he knew that if he really nodded off, then he might fall down that well, and that would be very dangerous. So perhaps it's not appropriate for us to use that method, but we can find another method that we can use. So for myself, when I was younger, the senior monks, they found a means to overcome this drowsiness. There would be sitting meditation together, and there would be kind of a sense of competition with one another. And so we'd sit there and put a spoon on our head. And if we felt drowsy and started nodding off, then that spoon would fall and it would make this loud sound. And it would show that one had nodded off. Because there was the sense of a bit of competition, then we didn't want for that to happen. So maybe you can try that. You're sitting in your room, you can put a spoon on your head, and if that doesn't make a loud enough sound, then you can put a metal cup on your head. And then you can see, well, am I sleepy? And if you sit for 1 hour, 2 hours, and the cup is still there, the spoon is still on your head, then that's very good. And so the next is this restlessness and worry. And so this too is something that's possible to come up within the heart, and it manifests as fear as well. And so some people are quite scared. Maybe they haven't come to the monastery before, and they're staying in a forest for the first time. And they hear the sound of a gecko and they think it's a ghost. And there was cases of this at the monastery, and there'd be some women staying in the huts behind the kitchen in the forest. It goes up the hill a bit, and the huts are there in the forest, and they hear the sound of a gecko, and it's very loud. And the geckos can sometimes as well they can knock their bodies against the wall. And when they hit the wall like this, it can sound like there's something knocking on the wall or knocking on the door. And they didn't know what it was. And when one doesn't know, then it's easy to think, well, there's someone coming, or maybe it's a ghost coming to my heart. And so for myself, when I was just newly ordained, I went to another monastery. It was about 29 years ago that this happened. I was just 1 year as a monk. And the abbot of that monastery was from the northeast of Thailand. And Lumpur Anan sent me to go and stay there. And it was quite secluded in this valley, in a rubber plantation. And it wasn't like Wat Mapchan here. We'd walk on arms round to the marketplace. It took about 5 kilometers for the arms round. And we'd come back and eat and then go off to our huts and just meditate by ourselves in the huts. And the sala, the meditation hall back then, it didn't have any walls. And so the forest was quite a lush forest. And it had different kinds of animals. And one of them was a civet cat. And this was the first time that I got to find out what a civet cat is like. That I'd heard monks in the past explain the call that they make when they cry out. But this is the first time that I had heard it. And if it's the first time, one doesn't know what it is, and it's easy to think that it's a ghost, the way that it cries out. And so for myself, I didn't know what it was. There was a little bit of fear that was coming up because of this strange sound. So there was a thought that arose that maybe this could be a ghost. And it's quite common for Asians to think this because we've heard about ghost stories since we were very young. But there was also another part of my mind that was more mindful and thought, well, it's probably not a ghost. And so there was this conflict going on between these two parts of my mind. But there was also a house cat next to me that was asleep, and I felt very comforted by the presence of that cat. And so there was this civet cat, this wild cat, that was calling out, and I had a flashlight that was using very kind of old-fashioned batteries, and it wasn't so clear, but I shone it and I saw that, the civet cats are like this. They look like this. And so if there is this restlessness of mind, worry, or doubt, or fear, rather, then it stops the mind from being peaceful. So we need then to find methods to be able to overcome that. And so then, what can we recollect? We can recollect the Buddha. You can use this as the object of our mind, that I am the disciple of the Buddha. And so there's nothing which is a danger for me. You think that if I don't have the karma to be harmed, to be hurt, then I won't experience any danger. And so we bring our minds to a centered and stable place. That if I haven't produced the karma, then this won't be dangerous for me. We take the Buddha to be the focal point of our mind. Or we can recollect a teacher, an awakened teacher, and focus on them. And so it's possible then for this fear to pass and for joy and contentedness to arise in the heart in its place. So for us, we are disciples of Longpo Anan, and his disciples, often when they meet with problems, they like to recollect him and to recollect his loving kindness. And this then can bring the heart to feel at ease. So previously, Longpo Anan had gone on Tudong, so wandered into Sisaket province in the northeast to a charnel ground outside of a village called Nonggao. And afterwards, when Longpo became an abbot, he liked to send his own monks to go and stay there as well. So they would go into the charnel ground, and we would put up our umbrella tents far from one another. And it's quite normal going into these places that one will feel fear. But we went in and we would recollect Longpo, Longpo Anan, and do some chanting. But then, before sitting in meditation, recollect his goodness, his virtuous qualities. And this can bring up a feeling of peace and fullness in our hearts, that this fear can then subside. When we recollect an awakened a teacher like this, or we recollect the qualities of the Buddha. And so this too is something that we can try to use, but what's important is that we seek out a method which does work for us, that we need to use our wisdom like this, No matter what comes up, we need to find a method to be able to fix that. So like this fear, for example, you know, how can we overcome that? How can we abandon that? And so next there's vichikicca, which is the skeptical doubt. So it's this feeling of being uncertain, unsure, of being worried that the heart's not committed to something, that we're not feeling certain in something. Maybe not certain that what we're doing, the way we're practicing, is correct. So maybe we've tried practicing in a certain way, but we just don't feel confident about that, the validity and the correctness of the way we're practicing. And is that right? Have you ever experienced that? And so sometimes we come to practice, but we've come from the background of having another religion. Or like the people have come here from overseas, the monastics here, that they've left their family, their mother and father already, they've left their country, and they've come to study the Dhamma in Thailand. But there can also be a feeling of uncertainty, that they've come all this way, and is this actually correct? Is this right? Or is this wrong? And my teacher, the way he teaches, is it correct? There can be this doubts here as well. We can doubt about ourselves. We can doubt our teacher. We can doubt this new thing that we're doing. Is it right? So when we have this doubt, then what we need to do is to find something which isn't shaken, that we can depend upon. And so we can think to ourselves, well, this probably is the right thing. It's probably good. And we can see the different Western practitioners, the senior practitioners, and the way that they have practiced, and see that that shows good results. But when we practice, if we're doubting, then we just practice and doubt at the same time. We just carry on with the practice, regardless of our doubts. And this is how Lompo Nan has taught us. If we're doubting, then we just practice along with that. But the thing is, we don't stop, we don't retreat. We just carry on doing it without turning back. And even though these things come up, we do have means to be able to overcome them. So therefore, for us practitioners, when we're practicing, we need to meet with these five hindrances, these nivaranas. At least at some point, we need to come across them. But for many people, they want to get results very quickly. But the thing is that they need to pass through these obstructions first. If they want to get quick results, then they need to find means to be able to overcome these five hindrances that work to be able to fix these five kind of moods or objects of the mind. And if we can do that, then we'll experience peace arising. But for many people, they have this feeling in their heart that they want to get it quick. They want to just sit and meditate right now and get results right now. Listen to the teachings of an awakened being and then experience awakening. But it's hard for that to happen. It's almost impossible. And why is that? It's because we need to collect. We need to slowly build up these qualities. And so there was a disciple of the Buddha who was able to awaken even faster than very venerable Sariputta. And so that was Bahiya. And when we just listen to the story of his last life, and we hear how he listened to the Dhamma of the Buddha, and the Buddha taught him that in the seen there is just the seen, that when you experience something, an emotion, so there's anger coming up, then it's just anger, it's just that. And see it like that, that whatever appears within the heart, that's all it is. This anger is like that, liking is like that, ill will is just ill will. It's not sure, it's unstable. So if there's disliking, it's just that. It's not sure, it's not stable. If you eat food and it tastes delicious, it's not sure, it's not stable. That this is just a sankhara, it's just a conditioned phenomena which is appearing, but it's not true or genuine. And so see it as merely that. And that's all the Buddha taught, and he could awaken. But the thing is that, well, for us, that we don't have that kind of barami, and we don't have that kind of jnana, that knowledge appearing for us. So we need to put in the causes for that. But if we look into the past to what Bahiya had done in order to experience that, then we see that he had created great causes, that he had studied under Buddha Kassapa and ordained under him. And he was really intent on his practice in that life, but he didn't reach any stage of awakening. But he had that really sincere intent. But then he passed away and then was still in the cycle of samsara, getting born and dying again. And so in his last life then, he awakened to the Dhamma, but he wasn't able to ordain. He became an arahant, but he didn't ordain. And so following the scriptures, that if there was someone who had reached full awakening and they were a layperson, then there would be robes that would appear and they would be able to ordain, and the Buddha would ordain them as a monastic right there. But this didn't happen for Bahiya because he hadn't created the karma for that to happen. And so the Buddha sent him out to go find a robe, and he was looking through a rubbish heap, and then a cow came and kind of mutilated him and killed him. And so this is the karma that he had was experiencing from his past actions. And what karma was it that he had created for him to not be able to find any robes? And so what they say is that he had done many good deeds in his previous lives, but he had never offered any robes. He had offered food, he had offered all different kinds of things, but he hadn't offered any robes. And then the karma for him to be killed in that way was that, so in the cycle of samsara, going between birth and death, there was one life where he was a hunter, and he met with a Pajeka Buddha, so a solitary Buddha. And this Buddha had very beautiful robes, and so he killed the Buddha and took his robes. And so through this karma, then he experienced the results of that. We see how all things that arise, they have their causes for them to arise. And so through this cause, then what he experienced was that he didn't get any robes. So therefore, if we don't awaken to the Dhamma, then we need to be born and die again and again in the cycle of samsara. So therefore we need to try to put in our energy to be creating as much goodness as we can. Whatever things are good, then we do those. Whatever is not good, we try to go far away from them. So these nivaranas, these five hindrances, are things which come up for practitioners, are things which we need to be able to fix. So ill will, for example, it's very important that we need to try to see the danger of this and see how harmful it is, especially if it comes up very in a very strong way. But if we have great anger for someone and we're not wise, then we can harm them quite easily. Maybe you just pick up a gun and shoot them. And the time that it takes for that all to happen can be very short, but the results of that action can be very long. If we look just in this life, then at the very least we go to prison and get a life sentence. Maybe in some countries they have the law that if one murders someone, then that person gets executed. And in Thailand we don't have execution like this, but people who murder, they get a life sentence usually. But if we look further than that, the results of karma past this life, the way that the Buddha taught was that one would be killed for 100 lives. And just from that small amount of anger that had come up, that it's not just this life that we experience the result, but it's 500 lives. And so, therefore, we need to try to really see the danger of this, see the drawbacks of these hindrances and of ill will. And we try to cut it out, we try to remove that, try to, at the very least, reduce the anger in the hearts. But if we can get it to a point where it's just not there anymore, then that's even better. But at the very least, we can get it so it's like this crocodile which is asleep, and it's just there below the water. It's not coming up, it's not manifesting, and it just lies there until it dies and it rots away. And if that can happen, then that's extremely good. And so therefore I've received this invitation to come and speak about the Dhamma to you all today. So may you be well, may you grow in blessings.